All right, German labor law, ready to jump in. From the looks of your notes, you're really trying to get a handle on this whole system.
It's definitely a system with a lot to unpack.
Yeah, I mean, we've got this legal document plus all your research. And the first thing that struck me was, it's not just one big book of rules, is it?
It's not. It's way more complex than that.
Legislation, collective agreements, court decisions, it's all kind of woven together.
Exactly. And that's a big difference from how some other countries do things. You can't just open up one code and boom, there it is.
Much more dynamic, more layered.
Absolutely.
And one thing that kept popping up in your notes was how much emphasis German labor law puts on protecting employees. Is that as big a deal as it seems?
It's huge. Really, if you want to understand German labor law, that's the core idea. It's all about setting a minimum level of rights.
So you can give workers more than what the law says, but never less.
Exactly. Can't go below that floor.
Huh. So even if a company wanted to, say, offer less vacation time than what's legally required, they couldn't. Nope. Not allowed. Baked right into the system.
Interesting. And this is influenced by stuff happening outside Germany too, right? I saw you'd mention EU directives.
Right. Those are playing a role too. The EU is trying to get labor laws more similar across its member countries.
So Germany's not just doing its own thing. It's part of this bigger picture.
Exactly.
Adds a whole other layer, doesn't it? But before we go too far down that road, let's focus back on Germany itself. Your notes split things into two main branches. Individual labor law.
Right. That's you and your boss, basically. Correct. The one-on-one relationship.
And then there's collective labor law, which is where unions and all that come in.
Exactly. That's about workers acting together to influence things. Really powerful.
All right. Well, let's stick with individual stuff for now. One thing I found really surprising was that in Germany, employment contracts don't actually have to be in writing.
Yeah, that throws a lot of people off.
It does. So, like, you could just shake hands and have a job.
Technically, yeah. The law recognizes the relationship even without a written contract. Wow. But I'm guessing in reality, most people still get things in writing.
Oh, definitely. Especially for things like fixed-term contracts or non-competes, you absolutely want those in writing. It's legally safer.
Good to know. Speaking of specifics, minimum wage. As of January 2025, it's 12.82 euros per hour, right?
That's right. Brand new increase.
Does that apply to everyone or are there exceptions?
Pretty much everyone. There are a few very specific cases, but generally that's the baseline.
Makes sense. Okay, moving on to sick leave. You mentioned something called the Continuation of Remuneration Act.
It does sound a bit intimidating, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
But basically what it means is if you get sick, your employer has to keep paying you for a certain amount of time.
So I can't just get cut off if I come down with the flu.
Nope. It's part of that social safety net I mentioned.
That's a pretty big difference from what I'm used to. Okay, how about when you're not sick? Vacation time. Minimum 20 working days, right?
That's the minimum, yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of contracts go above and beyond that.
Really? Like how much more?
Oh, seeing 25, even 30 days isn't unheard of. Germans take their time off seriously.
I can see why. Okay, you also mentioned this part-time bridge thing. What is that exactly?
It's a newer thing, meant to give workers more flexibility. Basically, you can go part-time for a set period and then have the right to go back to your full-time hours later.
So, like, if you needed to care for a family member or go back to school, you could do that without losing your job completely.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool. Okay, another biggie. Equal treatment.
Yeah.
How seriously does Germany take that?
Very seriously. It's literally in their constitution. No discrimination based on gender, race, religion, any of that.
And didn't you find a whole law about it too?
Yep, the General Act on Equal Treatment. Yep. And they keep updating it. Like in 2006, they expanded it even more.
So it's not just words. It's something they're actively working on.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's talk dismissal protection. That seems to be one of the biggest differences between Germany and a lot of other places.
Oh, yeah. Once you've been at a company for 6 months and it's a company with more than 10 employees, it gets really hard to fire you.
6 months. Wow. Why is that such a central part of German labor law?
Well, it's partly historical. After World War II, Germany was really focused on creating a stable society, and job security was a big part of that.
So they wanted to make sure people felt secure in their jobs.
Exactly.
But that must make things tricky for businesses sometimes, right?
It can, yeah. It might make them less willing to hire new people if they know it'll be so hard to let them go later.
Makes sense. It's a trade-off, I guess. So let's say I've been at a company for over a year and they want to fire me. What do they have to do?
Well, first of all, they need a good reason. The law calls it a socially justified reason.
Like what?
Things like if the employee gets seriously ill and can't work anymore, or if they do something really bad, or if the company's downsizing.
So even with a good reason, it's not simple.
Nope. There are procedures, warnings, and even then, the employee can take it to court.
So companies can't just fire people on a whim.
Not at all.
Okay. So bigger companies, longer tenures, it's tough to fire someone. What about smaller companies, or if you haven't been there that long?
There's still some protection, though it's not as strong. But even then, German law is more protective than a lot of other places.
Interesting. Are there certain groups of workers who get even more protection?
Absolutely. Pregnant women, people on parental leave, severely disabled folks. It's basically impossible to fire them without jumping through a ton of hoops.
Wow. They really go all out to protect those folks.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Okay, what about notice periods? How does that work?
You can agree on a notice period in your contract, but there are minimums set by law, and they get longer the longer you've been with the company.
So the longer you're there, the more time you get to transition out.
Exactly.
And I assume the employer has to honor that too, right?
Oh, yeah. It goes both ways.
You also said it's pretty common for people to challenge dismissals in court in Germany. Why is that?
Well, one reason is that the way the labor courts work, if you lose your case in the first round, you don't have to pay any court costs.
Ah, so it's less risky for the employee to take a shot.
Exactly.
What about severance pay? Are there clear rules about that?
No set rules, but over time, the courts have come up with some general guidelines. They're often used as a starting point for settlements.
Interesting. So, like, what kind of ballpark are we talking about?
It depends on the situation, of course, but a common starting point is half a month's salary for every year you worked there.
So if you were there for 10 years, you could be looking at 5 months' pay.
Potentially, yeah.
Okay, one last thing before we move on to collective stuff.
Yeah.
Employee leasing. What's the deal with that in Germany?
That's where one company basically rents workers from another company. And as with a lot of things in German labor law, there are rules to make sure it's not abused.
Like what kind of rules?
Well, for example, those leasing arrangements can only last for 18 months. After that, the worker is considered a permanent employee of the company that's been using them.
Ah, so it's meant to be a temporary thing, not a way for companies to get around having regular employees.
Exactly.
That's a good example of how German law tries to stay one step ahead.
Mm.
Okay, I think that covers the individual side pretty well. Ready to dive into the collective side?
Mm.
That's where things get really interesting. Okay, collective labor law. It seems like in Germany, workers' rights aren't just about the individual. It's about the power of the group too, right?
It is. Collective labor law is really central here. It's about giving workers a way to negotiate as a group, you know, to really have a say in how things work.
And the starting point for that is the right to collective bargaining, right? That's like constitutionally protected in Germany.
It is. And that gives unions and those employer associations a lot of power. They hash out these agreements that set standards for, well, pretty much everything.
Hmm.
Pay, hours, benefits. It's a whole different way of doing things than in systems where it's all decided company by company.
So these collective agreements, they sound like a pretty big deal, but how do they actually work in practice? Does every company have to follow them?
Well, not automatically. There are a couple ways it works. First, if the employer is part of the association that made the agreement, then yeah, they're bound by it.
Makes sense. Kind of like you join the club, you play by the club rules.
Yeah.
What about companies that aren't part of those associations, though? Can they just ignore the agreements?
Not necessarily. The government can actually step in and say, nope, this agreement applies to everyone in this sector. It's called a universally binding declaration.
Wow, so they can just make it mandatory. What's the reasoning behind that?
It's to prevent what they call a race to the bottom. You know, if some companies could just undercut everyone else by ignoring these agreements, it would be bad for workers and create unfair competition.
So it levels the playing field, protects workers across the board.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about these works councils I keep seeing in your notes. What are they all about?
Now, this is where things get really interesting. Works councils are groups of employee representatives that are elected within a company, and their job is to represent the interests of all the workers there.
So kind of like a mini union inside each company.
There are similarities, but it's not exactly the same. A big difference is that the Works Council represents all the employees, not just union members. It's meant to be more inclusive.
And they actually have some power, right? It's not just a symbolic thing.
Oh, they have real power, definitely. All laid out in the Works Constitution Act. That law spells out all their rights and what they can do, and covers a lot of ground, too.
So how common are these works councils? Is it just big companies that have them?
Not at all. Any company with 5 or more employees can form a works council.
5? That's, wow, pretty much anyone. Yeah. So what kind of stuff do these works councils actually get involved in?
A ton of stuff. They have a say in things like, you know, daily work schedules, new tech being introduced, even things like working from home policies, anything that affects the employee's day-to-day experience. It's not just about pay and benefits. It's about the whole work environment.
So they really have a broad scope. Can you give me an example of how this might play out in real life?
Sure. Let's say the company wants to install some new system to track how productive their employees are, you know, like monitoring their computers or something. The Works Council would have to be consulted on that, and they could potentially block it if they thought it was too invasive or unfair to the employees.
Wow. So they can actually overrule the company's decision? That's real power.
It is. It's all about making sure that these decisions are made with the workers in mind, not just for the company's benefit.
It's about collaboration, not just top-down control.
Exactly.
I imagine that leads to some interesting discussions sometimes. What happens if the management and the Works Council just can't agree?
Well, they try to work it out, obviously. But if they hit a dead end, there's this neutral third party, a conciliation board they can call in.
Oh, gotta love those German systems. Always with the procedures and the order. What about hiring and firing? Do the works councils have a say in those too?
Oh, absolutely. For companies with over 20 employees, the works council has to approve new hires.
Seriously? So the employer can't just bring someone on board without their okay?
Nope. And it goes for firing too. In certain situations, the works council can actually block a dismissal, even if the employer wants to get rid of someone.
That's pretty amazing. Why do they have so much control over that?
Well, it's all part of that idea of job security we talked about earlier. The Works Council is there to make sure that hiring and firing decisions are fair, you know, not based on some personal whim or bias.
So it's about protecting employees from unfair treatment. Makes sense.
Right.
Okay, so everyday decisions, hiring, firing. What about the really big stuff like mass layoffs or restructuring? Does the Works Council have a role there too?
They do, and it's even more important in those situations. German law says they have to go through this thing called a reconciliation of interests process.
Is that like a formality? Just a rubber stamp?
Not at all. The company and the Works Council have to sit down and actually negotiate a plan to minimize the impact on the workers. It's a way of acknowledging that these decisions have real consequences for people's lives. You know, it's not just about numbers.
So the company can't just announce a bunch of layoffs and walk away.
Nope. They have to work with the Works Council to find a way to make it as painless as possible. And part of that is coming up with a social plan. That's basically a roadmap for things like severance pay, helping people find new jobs, retraining programs, all that.
So it's about supporting those workers, not just cutting them loose. That makes sense. But all of this must be pretty expensive for the companies, right? All these works councils, these social plans?
Oh, there are definitely costs involved. The employer has to pay for everything. The works council's office, their training, even their legal fees if they have to sue the company.
Wait, hold on. The company pays for them to sue the company?
Yep. That's how strongly they believe in this system.
Yeah.
The idea is that for the works council to really do its job, it has to be independent. They can't be afraid to challenge the company if they need to.
So the company is basically funding its own internal watchdog. That's pretty radical.
It is, but it seems to work pretty well. It's all about finding that balance, you know, between the company's interests and the workers' interests.
And how about the Works Council members themselves? Do they just have to squeeze all this work into their evenings and weekends?
It depends on the size of the company. For big companies with 200 employees or more, some of the Works Council members are actually released from their regular jobs completely so they can focus on their Works Council duties full time.
Wow, so they're like full-time employee advocates. What about smaller companies, though?
Even in smaller companies, they're entitled to paid time off for anything related to their Works Council duties. Meetings, training, all that.
This whole Works Council system is really something else. It's so different from what I'm used to, but it seems to be a really effective way to give workers a voice. Okay, so we've covered individual rights, collective bargaining, and Works Councils. What else did your research uncover?
Well, there's also a whole layer of additional protections for certain groups of workers, you know, people who might be more vulnerable in a traditional work environment.
Like who? What kind of protections are we talking about?
Things like extended parental leave, special rules for pregnant women, and stronger protections for people with disabilities. It's all part of making sure everyone has a fair shot.
Okay, now I'm really interested to hear more about that. Let's dive into those details in part 3. Okay. We're back for the final part of our deep dive into German labor law. We've covered a lot of ground, individual rights, collective bargaining, works councils. But you also mentioned some extra protections for certain groups of workers, right?
Right. People who might need a little extra support in the workplace. It's a really important part of the system here. Germany takes social responsibility very seriously.
Yeah, it seems like they're really trying to create a workplace that's fair for everyone. So let's start with pregnant women. What kind of protections do they have under German law?
Well, the big one is that they can't be forced to do any work that would put their health or the baby's health at risk.
So no dangerous chemicals, heavy lifting, anything like that.
Exactly. And as the pregnancy goes on, they get even more protection. Like in the last 6 weeks before the due date, a woman can just ask to be off work completely, no questions asked.
And after the baby's born, what kind of maternity leave do they get?
They're required to take 8 weeks off. It's not optional. It's the law. They need that time to recover and bond with the baby.
8 weeks is pretty common, I guess.
Yeah.
But what about their job security during that time? Can they be fired while they're on leave?
Absolutely not. From the moment a woman gets pregnant until 4 months after the baby's born, it's basically impossible to fire her.
That must be such a relief for new mothers. No worrying about losing their job while they're dealing with, well, everything else.
Exactly. It allows them to focus on what's important.
What about parental leave for both parents? Is that a thing in Germany?
Oh, yeah, big time. Both mothers and fathers can take up to 3 years of unpaid leave to care for their child.
3 years? That's incredible. But what about their jobs? Do they have any guarantee of getting back to work after that?
Yeah, they have the legal right to return to their old job, or at least a similar one.
That's amazing. It really lets parents prioritize their kids' early years without having to sacrifice their careers. Okay, what about people with disabilities? What kind of protections do they get?
Germany is very strong on inclusion for people with disabilities. There's a whole section of the Social Code, number 9, that lays out a bunch of measures to protect their rights at work.
Can you give me an example? Like, what kind of concrete protections are we talking about?
Sure. One big thing is that if you want to fire an employee who's severely disabled, you need special permission from this government agency, the Integration Office.
So it's not a decision the employer can just make on their own. There's oversight.
Exactly. They have to justify it, prove it's not discrimination. And it's not just about firing. Companies also have to set up a special representative body for their disabled employees so they have a voice in how things are run.
So they have someone to advocate for them, make sure their needs are being met?
Exactly. And on top of all that, they get 5 extra days of paid leave per year, specifically to deal with anything related to their disability.
It really sounds like German labor law goes above and beyond to create a fair and inclusive workplace for everyone.
It does. It's really baked into the whole system. It's not just about the bottom line. It's about taking care of people.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive. We started with this big pile of laws and research, and now I actually feel like I understand the basics of German labor law. And honestly, one of the biggest takeaways for me is that it is possible to have a strong economy and strong worker protections.
Absolutely. It's not an either situation. In fact, you could argue that treating workers well actually makes the economy stronger in the long run. Happy workers are productive workers, right?
That's a great point. Something for everyone to think about. Well, thank you so much for guiding us through this. It's been incredibly insightful.
You're very welcome. It's a topic I love to talk about.
And to our listener, we hope you found this deep dive helpful. If you want to learn more, don't forget to check out the show notes for links to additional resources. Until next time, keep exploring and keep asking questions.